Rudolf Steiner remains one of the most fascinating yet polarizing intellectual figures of the 20th century. His teachings on consciousness, education, and spirituality continue to inspire millions worldwide through Waldorf schools, biodynamic farming, and anthroposophical medicine. Despite being a contemporary of Freud and Jung, Steiner's work often receives less mainstream recognition, yet his practical applications have arguably had more lasting impact than many of his better-known peers. What makes Steiner particularly intriguing is the remarkable tension in his life. A rigorous philosopher and scientist who also claimed direct perception of spiritual realities. Celebrities like Jennifer Aniston and Sandra Bullock have praised Waldorf education for its holistic approach, while biodynamic farming principles have influenced sustainable agriculture movements worldwide. As climate change and technological disruption force us to reconsider our relationship with nature and consciousness, Steiner's integrated vision of humanity's place in the cosmos feels increasingly relevant to our fragmented modern world. Born in 1861 in what is now Croatia, Rudolf Steiner's extraordinary journey began with a childhood poised between different worlds. His father worked as a telegraph operator for the Southern Austrian Railway, positioning young Rudolf at the intersection of the natural world and the emerging scientific one. This liminal existence would become a defining feature of his life and thought. From his earliest years, Steiner exhibited an unusual relationship with reality. The physical world often appeared shadowy to him, while spiritual perceptions came with startling clarity. At around age 5, Steiner had his first conscious encounter with the spiritual realm. While sitting in a railway station waiting room, he saw an unknown woman enter who resembled his family members. She approached him saying, "Try now and later in life to help me as much as you can," then walked toward a stove and disappeared. Later that day, Steiner learned that a relative had committed suicide. From that moment, he lived with what he called the creative beings behind the world, accepting the spiritual realm as unquestioningly as the physical one. Despite this profound inner life, young Rudolf struggled academically. He couldn't spell or write grammatically until age 10, an experience that would later influence his revolutionary educational methods. His formal education bored him, yet he developed intense curiosity about natural phenomena, conducting simple experiments with sand, ink, and quill pens. Two themes emerged that would define his life's work: determining how everything connected and exploring the limits of knowledge. At age 9, Steiner experienced a revelation when an assistant teacher lent him a geometry book. Despite his poor writing skills, he was captivated by triangles, polygons, and the Pythagorean theorem. This encounter opened a door to another world, providing both intellectual satisfaction and spiritual confirmation. What thrilled him most wasn't just geometry itself, but the ability to work with forms which are seen purely inwardly, independent of the outer senses. This insight, that unseen things could be as real as visible ones, became the philosophical foundation of his life's work. Imagine the young boy walking an hour each way through knee-deep snow to attend school, his mind filled with geometric forms and spiritual perceptions that he couldn't share with anyone. This isolation shaped his determination to eventually build bridges between the worlds he inhabited, the visible and invisible, the scientific and spiritual, that others perceived as irreconcilable opposites. Between ages 11 and 18, Steiner attended the Realschule in Wiener Neustadt, requiring daily border crossing from his Hungarian home to Lower Austria. The bustling city life disoriented the nature-raised boy, who found rows of buildings overwhelming compared to his contemplative rural existence. Though initially struggling academically, his performance improved dramatically in his second year as he found mentors who recognized his unusual gifts. Steiner yearned for inspiring role models to anchor his developing idealism. His headmaster became one such figure after publishing a paper on physics that captured Steiner's imagination. Though understanding little of it initially, Steiner saved his allowance to buy the headmaster's book on matter and motion. Two other teachers profoundly influenced him, one who taught mathematics with exceptional clarity, and another who guided his passion for geometrical drawing. At 15, Steiner discovered Kant's Critique of Pure Reason and devoted himself to understanding this formidable philosophical text. Kant's central thesis that our minds impose categories like space and time onto reality rather than perceiving reality directly deeply troubled him. The notion that we can never know the thing in itself was anathema to Steiner, who was determined to find a way beyond these constraints. He rejected Kant's conclusions precisely because they left something outside thinking that we could only reflect on but never truly know. Despite his deep philosophical pursuits, Steiner continued developing practical skills. He learned bookbinding from one of his father's colleagues, taught himself stenography, and tended fruit trees with his siblings. Through self-instruction, the teenage Steiner mastered advanced mathematics, including analytical geometry, trigonometry, and calculus, subjects he wouldn't encounter in school for years. At 15, Steiner began tutoring fellow students, contributing to his family's finances while deepening his own understanding. He described receiving school knowledge as if in a dream, only truly awakening to what he discovered independently or learned from mentors. The process of teaching others transformed this dreamlike knowledge into something truly his own, an insight that would later inform his educational philosophy. After graduating with honors in 1879, Steiner entered Vienna's intellectual world, where he battled against materialism. Through Professor Brentano, he encountered arguments against psychologism, the reduction of mental acts to mere chemical processes. However, the most profound influence came from literature professor Carl Julius Schroer, whose passionate lectures introduced Steiner to Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Through Goethe, Steiner discovered a scientific approach that rejected mechanistic worldviews in favor of seeing nature as God's living garment, a living, metamorphosizing being. For Goethe, as later for Steiner, truth emerges when mind and outer world harmonize through disciplined imagination, not through detached observation, but through artistic, participatory engagement. While Steiner found philosophical discussions challenging, sharing his spiritual experiences proved nearly impossible. Until his 40s, his ability to see into supersensible reality remained largely private, with most people either misunderstanding or disbelieving him. Those who showed interest typically associated his experiences with spiritualism, seances, and messages from the dead, which Steiner found repulsive, considering spiritualists more materialists than the materialists for seeking physical evidence of spiritual realities. At 18, Steiner met Felix Koguski, a 46-year-old herb gatherer who shared his spiritual perceptions. Though unlearned, Felix was completely initiated into the mysteries of the effects of all plants and their connection with the universe and with man's nature. With Felix, Steiner could finally speak about the spiritual world as with someone of experience. Shortly after meeting Felix, Steiner encountered a mysterious figure known only as the Master, who directed him to crucial passages in Fichte's works. This master advised Steiner on his mission to overcome materialism. To overcome the enemy, you must begin by understanding him. You can only become the conqueror of the dragon by slipping into his skin. This guidance led Steiner to thoroughly study materialist philosophy before attempting to transcend it, a strategy that often caused him to be mistakenly associated with the very philosophies he opposed. Despite his serious intellectual pursuits, Steiner was no recluse. In Vienna's vibrant café culture, he engaged enthusiastically in artistic debates, particularly regarding Wagner's operas. He formed friendships with passionate intellectuals, including a Wagnerian, who later died of tuberculosis after an unrequited love affair, and a melancholy poet who eventually committed suicide. Though Steiner opposed the pessimistic philosophical currents prevalent in Vienna, he valued engaging with opposing viewpoints. As a young man with genius but no clear prospects, Steiner actively sought connections with established writers and thinkers. His mentor Schroyer helped secure his first significant opportunity, editing Goethe's scientific writings for the German National Literature Series at age 22. Schroyer also introduced Steiner to the wealthy Specht family, who needed a tutor for their children, particularly their disabled son Otto. Living comfortably with the Spechts, Steiner developed a deep spiritual friendship with Pauline Specht, the mother, and formed connections with influential figures like psychiatrist Josef Breuer. His most remarkable achievement was with 10-year-old Otto, who suffered from hydrocephalus and had been deemed hopeless. Through carefully designed short lessons and building the boy's confidence, Steiner not only helped Otto catch up academically, but also improved his physical condition. Otto eventually became a doctor before dying in World War I. This experience provided Steiner with profound insights into the body-soul relationship that later informed his groundbreaking work in education. Steiner's social life flourished at the Megalomania Cafe, where he became the stereotypical cafe intellectual, writing his Goethe introductions amid the surrounding bustle. The cafe attracted a diverse clientele: poets, artists, Wagnerians, Pythagoreans, astrologers, and vegetarians, reflecting Vienna's revival of occult and mystical ideas. Through these connections and his various writing positions, Steiner gained visibility in Viennese society, though he still felt unable to effectively communicate his deepest insights about thinking and the reality of the I. In 1889, Steiner moved to Weimar to edit Goethe's scientific papers for the Goethe-Schiller Archive. Though initially excited to work in the cultural heart of Germany, Steiner soon found himself isolated among academic colleagues who approached Goethe with deadening philological analysis rather than living appreciation. The stuffy atmosphere forced Steiner inward, leading to his doctoral dissertation under Heinrich von Stein of Rostock University. Beyond his Goethe work, Steiner edited complete editions of Schopenhauer and Jean-Paul. Though he disagreed with Schopenhauer's pessimistic philosophy, he appreciated his literary skill. Steiner felt greater spiritual affinity with Jean-Paul, whose novels often touched on magical or occult themes. This editorial work connected Steiner to Hans and Great Olden's social circle, where discussions centered on modern writers like Ibsen, Nietzsche, and Strindberg. During his Weimar years, Steiner engaged with the work of Ernst Haeckel, the popular materialist biologist who championed a version of monism based on matter rather than spirit. Despite their fundamental opposition, Steiner considered spirit the fundamental reality, Steiner defended Haeckel against religious fundamentalists, causing many to misunderstand Steiner's own position. Though finding Haeckel philosophically naive, Steiner appreciated his artistic sensibility, evident in his scientific illustrations. Steiner developed a complex relationship with Nietzsche's work, appreciating the philosopher's style and boldness while disagreeing with his materialist rejection of spiritual worlds. In 1895, Steiner published Friedrich Nietzsche, A Fighter Against His Time, making clear his appreciation yet philosophical differences. Elisabeth Forster Nietzsche, the philosopher's sister, briefly approached Steiner about helping arrange the Nietzsche archive. Steiner did visit the insane Nietzsche once, claiming to see the philosopher's beautiful soul hovering over his head, perceiving that Nietzsche had brought golden riches of great spirituality from former lives that couldn't manifest in his current incarnation. Tired of cheap lodgings in Weimar, Steiner moved into the home of Anna Unica, a recently widowed woman with 5 children. Though Steiner later married Anna, he mentions this fact only in passing in his autobiography, describing their relationship as one of close friendship where she did everything for him. Their relationship appears to have been practical rather than romantic, too familiar for a boarder and landlady, too distant for man and wife. Steiner's philosophy of freedom emerged from his spiritual encounters and scientific thinking during this period. The work argues that our perception of the material world is already infused with consciousness, making materialist explanations circular. Unlike Kant, Steiner rejected the notion of an inaccessible reality behind appearances, arguing instead that complete reality lies within the sensory world, made manifest through our knowing. For Steiner, recognizing thinking as a free spiritual act opens us to experiencing ourselves as spiritual beings. Though rigorously philosophical and lacking explicit occult content, Steiner maintained this work contained all the essentials of his later anthroposophy. At around age 35, Steiner experienced a profound transformation in his consciousness. While his inner spiritual world had always been vivid and concrete, the physical world had seemed shadowy to him. Now he developed a new clarity and acuteness in perceiving the sensory world. This shift allowed him to approach the physical world objectively, recognizing that it revealed aspects about which spiritual insight could say nothing. Steiner's new relationship to the outer world sharpened his grasp of the spiritual realm by highlighting the differences between the two. Like Nietzsche and William Blake, Steiner recognized that life emerges from the dynamic interplay of complementary forces. Rather than trying to dissolve the contrast between spiritual and physical worlds, Steiner celebrated it as the key to life itself. Life itself is but a continuous overcoming and recreation of opposites. Steiner recognized that human beings aren't merely passive observers of cosmic processes. Knowledge isn't just our private possession, but part of the cosmic process itself. The world might exist without consciousness, but it would be incomplete. Through our knowing, the cosmos becomes whole. We aren't merely copyists, but co-creators in the evolution of the world. Man is not only there in order to form for himself a picture of the finished world, nay, he himself cooperates in bringing the world into existence. As his work at the Goethe Archives neared completion, Steiner felt compelled to move on from Weimar's increasingly stifling atmosphere. He accepted the editorship of the struggling magazine for literature in Berlin, Germany's avant-garde center, seeing it as another step in his destiny despite his limited editorial experience. Steiner's editorship of the magazine for literature proved disastrous. Sales plummeted as he alienated readers with articles criticizing Berlin's Philistinism, defending Emile Zola in the Dreyfus Affair, and publishing incomprehensible theater reviews. His association with anarchist John Henry Mackay caused the magazine to be banned in Russia, while academics canceled subscriptions in disgust. Despite these failures, Steiner remained convinced he wasn't catering to modern bourgeois Philistines, but rather to the true spirit of the age. Steiner's teaching at the Working Men's College revealed his extraordinary gifts as an educator. His interactive approach encouraged students to comment and ask questions, unusual in German education where passive listening was the norm. Sessions often extended past midnight, with the most engaging material emerging from student participation. Beyond history, he taught literature, philosophy, science, and public speaking, correcting student papers with remarkable delicacy. Outside formal lectures, Steiner would take students on countryside walks, where he'd speak on diverse subjects from Greek philosophy to botany, displaying encyclopedic knowledge that left students in awe. After years of struggling to find a receptive audience for his spiritual insights, Steiner discovered an unexpected opportunity through the Theosophical Society. When a young theosophist named Fritz Seiler recognized the esoteric knowledge in Steiner's article on Goethe's The Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily, he arranged for Steiner to lecture at the Berlin Lodge. This September 1900 invitation marked a turning point. Steiner finally found listeners receptive to his spiritual vision. Steiner's September 1900 lecture on Nietzsche at the Theosophical Library proved so successful that he was invited back a week later to speak on Goethe's Fairy Tale. This second lecture marked a historic moment. Steiner publicly shared his spiritual experiences for the first time. Despite his initial skepticism toward theosophical literature, which he found distasteful, Count and Countess Brockdorff recognized his profound knowledge and invited him to give regular lectures on mysticism. Among Steiner's theosophical audiences was Marie von Sivers, a 33-year-old Baltic Russian who had studied drama in Paris. Fluent in multiple languages and translator for Edward Schur, Marie approached Steiner after a lecture, beginning a conversation about her profound feeling for the living nature of speech, an interest that would later manifest in their co-development of Eurythmy. During another conversation, she asked whether the time had come for a new spiritual movement founded on modern science, essentially inviting Steiner to create one. Though Steiner remained married to Anna Unica until her death in 1911, Marie became the most important person in his life, eventually becoming his wife in 1914 and proving instrumental to his spiritual work. While Marie helped establish a theosophical section in Bologna, Steiner delivered his second lecture series on Christianity as Mystical Fact. In 1901, he also presented lectures to D. Commenden on From Buddha to Christ, a theme that would soon create friction with his theosophical associates. Steiner argued that while Buddha achieved remarkable spiritual development and deserved recognition as a great teacher, Christ was fundamentally unique. Unlike Buddha and other spiritual teachers who could merely guide individuals toward truth, Christ's birth, death, and resurrection represented an event of cosmic significance that enabled humanity as a whole to achieve new participation in the spiritual worlds. Steiner's insistence on Christ's uniqueness contradicted Theosophy's principle of religious tolerance. While Madame Blavatsky promoted the then radical view that all religions were equally valid paths to truth, Steiner maintained that Christ's incarnation was history's single most significant event. This Christocentric aspect of Steiner's work alienates many, though it bears no resemblance to fundamentalism. Steiner arrived at his understanding through direct spiritual experience during his difficult Berlin period, when he underwent what might be called a creative illness. Despite theological differences, Steiner impressed theosophists enough to be invited to become general secretary of the Theosophical Society's German section. He accepted with two conditions: freedom to speak as he wished, and Marie von Sivers as his assistant. In July 1902, they attended the Theosophical Congress in London as guests, where Steiner met Annie Besant and other theosophical leaders. In his brief speech, Steiner declared that German philosophy, the work of Hegel, Fichte, Schelling, and Leibniz, belonged in the theosophical tradition, clearly signaling his intentions to bring this perspective into the society. Steiner returned from London transformed, clean-shaven, sporting a bowler hat, and with a new demeanor. His lecture style changed. Rather than looking at his audience, he fixed his gaze above them. He denounced spiritualism and transmediumship, insisting that spiritual knowledge must come through clear waking consciousness. He alienated many by arguing that modern science needed the religious impulse to avoid becoming an empty shell. Through Lucifer Gnosis, the journal he established with Marie von Sivers, Steiner serialized his earliest important occult works, Knowledge of the Higher Worlds and Its Attainment, and essays later published as Cosmic Memory. Along with Theosophy, these form Anthroposophy's three foundational texts. Knowledge of the Higher Worlds presents exercises for developing spiritual perception, which Steiner believed was a potential within everyday consciousness. His methods combine meditations with moral development, leading to stages of supersensory consciousness he called imagination, inspiration, and intuition. Steiner describes the human spirit as that aspect of consciousness which transcends personal concerns, seeking objective knowledge rather than subjective satisfaction. Unlike animals, humans develop deep interest in things unrelated to personal survival, like science, art, philosophy, and religion. Through spiritual development, we transform our sevenfold nature. Physical body, etheric body, astral body, and the I are given in each incarnation, while three additional bodies, spirit self, life spirit, and spirit man, can be created through conscious effort. In Theosophy, Steiner details the soul's journey after death. The etheric body dissolves over 3 days while the individual experiences a panoramic vision of their entire life. The astral body persists for 1/3 of the person's lifetime in Kama Loka, purgatory, where desires cannot be satisfied and must be purified. The ego then experiences life backward, from death to birth, perceiving the consequences of all actions. With higher spiritual beings' assistance, the I chooses conditions for its next incarnation, selecting parents, location, and physical attributes best suited for spiritual growth. Steiner describes Earth as having passed through 3 previous incarnations, old Saturn, old Sun, and old Moon, with 3 future stages to come, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. On old Saturn, characterized by heat, humans experienced only the dullest consciousness. On old Sun, where warmth hardened into air, we received etheric bodies and plant-like consciousness. On old Moon, characterized by water, we developed astral bodies and dreamy picture consciousness. Our current Earth phase brought physical materialization and waking consciousness. Upon becoming General Secretary of the German section of the Theosophical Society, Steiner swiftly rose to prominence, establishing himself as a powerful, charismatic figure with a brilliant mind. His growing popularity, with many new recruits joining specifically because of him, created tension with Annie Besant and other leaders who saw him as a rival to their authority. Steiner's approach to theosophy diverged significantly from orthodoxy in his emphasis on art's importance to spiritual development. At the 1907 Munich Congress, he transformed the concert hall with red carpets, draped walls, and painted columns, creating a temple illusion, and staged Schur's sacred drama of Eleusis with Marie von Sivers. Together, they developed speech formation, seeking to liberate words from logical constraints to convey deeper meaning. The final rupture with the Theosophical Society came when Annie Besant created the Order of the Star in the East to prepare for Jiddu Krishnamurti as the returned Christ. Steiner immediately refused to allow the order to operate in Germany, demanding members resign from it and sending Besant a telegram demanding her resignation as head of the Theosophical Society. She responded by revoking the German section's charter, effectively excommunicating Steiner. In January 1913, Steiner announced that since there was no longer a German section, they would form the Anthroposophical Society. By February, the new society boasted 2,500 members. On September 20, 1913, Steiner gathered with 40 followers on the Dornach Hill to place the foundation stone for the Gutaeanum, the temple of his new spiritual teaching. The building would act as a jelly mold for people's souls, a cosmic larynx through which the gods could speak to humanity. As they laid the copper double pentagonal dodecahedron into the earth, the sky darkened with thunder and lightning. Steiner turned to the 4 compass points, invoking spiritual hierarchies to help resist Ahriman's designs to cloud spiritual vision. When World War I broke out in 1914, the Gutaeanum became a gesture against the war's insanity. 17 nationalities, Russians, Germans, French, Austrians, worked together transcending national interests. Steiner organized first aid courses for all volunteers, knowing some might soon be called to fight against fellow anthroposophists. When artillery was positioned above their site, he grew taciturn and infinitely tired. Once, when 40 suspicious soldiers demanded entry, he personally gave them a tour, even demonstrating his carving technique. His sincerity won them over, securing good relations through regular tours. In May 1917, Otto von Lernenfeld, a German diplomat and anthroposophist, sought Steiner's ideas on achieving true peace. Over 3 weeks, they developed memoranda outlining his vision for society's restructuring. Steiner linked the soul's powers of thinking, feeling, and willing to 3 aspects of human organism: head/nervous system, rhythmic system, and metabolic system. Society, too, must embody these functions, corresponding to liberty, equality, and fraternity. The cultural sphere requires freedom, the rights sphere demands equality, and the economic sphere needs fraternity. Though threefoldness never became the social alternative Steiner envisioned, it inspired his most enduring initiative. Emil Molt asked him to establish a school for his employees' children, allowing Steiner to finally implement educational ideas he'd been developing since 1907. In September 1919, the Stuttgart Waldorf School opened with 12 teachers and 253 children in a converted restaurant. Steiner's approach centered on developing a love of learning, with education following 7-year developmental cycles. Children shouldn't learn reading until losing their first teeth around age 7, marking when senses separate off, allowing independent soul and spirit development. Teachers remained with classes throughout their development rather than changing yearly. By 1920, Steiner had given lectures to physicians that became the basis for anthroposophical medicine. His own physician, Ida Wegman, established the Clinical Therapeutic Institute near Dornach with a laboratory named Weleda after the Celtic goddess of health. Steiner's medicine, based on insights into threefold human nature, treats the individual rather than the disease, considering the body's nervous, rhythmic, and metabolic organization, along with etheric and astral forces. In May 1922, farmers approached Steiner about declining soil health and seed degeneration. He advised that soil itself was sick, affecting plants, animals, and people who ate its produce. He suggested natural preparations combined with compost and manure, subject to cosmic rhythms and terrestrial forces, could restore vitality to depleted earth. In June 1924, he finally delivered 8 lectures on his agricultural ideas at Count Kieserling's estate, establishing what would become biodynamic farming. The culmination of growing hostility came on December 31, 1922, when fire completely destroyed the Gotheanum. Steiner had seemingly foreseen this, having remarked that the building would not last long and would be a stumbling block to his enemies. Though opened in 1920, the Gotheanum was never fully completed, and Steiner constantly struggled with funding, recruitment, and convincing distant anthroposophists of its importance. Steiner bore the Gotheanum's destruction with outward equanimity, though it was a devastating blow. As the structure burned on New Year's Eve 1922, he walked silently around the blaze. By dawn, only concrete foundations remained amid acrid smoke. Yet on New Year's Day 1923, he announced their work would continue, and remarkably, they proceeded with their scheduled Christmas conference that very evening. He immediately began planning a second Gotheanum, not a replacement, but a continuation, to be built of reinforced concrete with a more austere, defiant design than its organic predecessor. Throughout 1923, Steiner delivered stern admonitions to followers, urging them to get back to basics and heal the splintering that had turned their society into competing initiatives. At the Christmas conference of 1923, he announced to 800 members the founding of the General Anthroposophical Society, with himself as president, a role he'd previously avoided. He also created a College for Spiritual Science with appointed collaborators heading specialized sections, Albert Steffen for literature, Marie Steiner for speech and music, Dr. Ita Wegman for medicine, Dr. Elizabeth Vrida for mathematics and astronomy, and Gunter Wachsmuth as treasurer. 1924 became Steiner's annus mirabilis despite already suffering from the disease that would kill him. He lectured tirelessly across Europe, delivering his Karmic Relationship series exploring karma's influence on history. By September, returning from England exhausted and gaunt, it was clear something was wrong, though he refused to rest. Under Ita Wegman's care, he continued lecturing until September 28th, when, during the Michaelmas festival, he had to excuse himself mid-lecture, his strength insufficient. He had given his last public address. Steiner spent his final 6 months confined to his bed in the Schreinerei studio, beneath his unfinished carving of Lucifer, Ahriman, and Christ. Though initially able to sit occasionally in his chair, soon even this proved too much. He continued working, handling correspondence delivered at 11 each morning, reading selected books, writing his autobiography by hand, drafting the society's constitution, and composing a new ritual for the Christian community. Alongside his autobiography, Steiner composed a series of letters to society members, later collected as Anthroposophical Leading Thoughts, a distilled essence of his life's work. Written in condensed, aphoristic style, they begin with his definition. Anthroposophy is a path of knowledge to guide the spiritual in the human being to the spiritual in the universe. He reiterated his insight that thought itself provides the means to transcend its limitations. Humans possess organs to perceive beyond the sensory world, but don't realize it. On March 29, 1925, Steiner's condition worsened, though pain lifted and calm expectancy came over him. He died on March 30, his face bearing what Waksmuth described as radiant peacefulness, resembling the representative of humanity figure he had left unfinished. 80 years later, Steiner's work continues in remarkable ways. Waldorf education has become the largest non-parochial independent educational movement in the world. Thousands of biodynamic farms operate globally. Campill schools help countless handicapped children, and Valeda products are widely used. The College for Spiritual Science still enrolls students, the second Gothianum remains the center of anthroposophical activity, and the society has branches worldwide. While Steiner's practical applications have flourished remarkably, his fundamental insights into consciousness and human freedom remain less recognized by mainstream philosophy. Yet his core insight remains vital, that the human eye is an irreducible reality, that it is free, that consciousness is at existence's core, and that we, long alienated from the world, are actually its solution. If this ever took central position in our understanding, it would inaugurate a new age of human development, precisely what Rudolf Steiner worked his entire life to achieve.